following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action, a lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
There were times where I don't know that I would be able to say this, but it is game week in Eagle Nation, and boy, oh boy, it sounds really, really good to say that. That's pretty impressive right there.
That's my resounding trumpet.
And that is how we start this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, as always.
4 days from kick, baby.
You know, we've talked about the countdown clock in the studio, and the closer we got to kickoff, but now that it says 4 days, I know we said it a couple of weeks ago, but it's go time.
Well, that countdown clock's been through a lot, too. It had to be reset once.
Yes.
We can almost reach out and touch it. We can almost taste it. There is going to be Georgia Southern football this Saturday, the 12th at 3:30.
Obviously, this is going to be a pretty football-centered edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We'll get to a couple of other news notes in just a few moments. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septics, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. You get into football week and a little bit of a sad note to get to as we get into the kickoff. Tommy Palmer, the longtime host on Georgia Public Broadcasting all across the Georgia airwaves as far as the Georgia High School Football Scoreboard Show. Tommy Palmer passing away this past Thursday evening after his battle with cancer. He ties in with Georgia Southern on a lot of things. Not only grew up, lived pretty much his entire life just down the road from Statesboro, but was also the first host of the Irk Russell Show, called Georgia Southern basketball early on in the network's history. And this was somebody, getting the chance to meet him over the years a couple of times, somebody that loved the sport of football more than anybody I think I've ever known.
Yeah, from that standpoint, you're a little heartbroken that Eagle football didn't begin until officially 1982. And under the same vein, when you talk Tommy Palmer, you don't necessarily think Georgia Southern Sports Network right away, even though you probably should, because of all that he did for high school football in this state. He hosted the Scoreboard Show for nearly 20 years. He worked with his son for so long. If there was a radio station in South Georgia, there's a good chance that he either knew somebody there, he worked there, or he got them involved somehow. But the very first host of the Irk Russell radio show, he was a mentor to Nate Hirsch back in 1970. He called Eagle basketball when he was just 26 years old. We've talked about Dave Nitz before. He was the original voice of the Eagles and called basketball from 1967 through 1970. Tommy took that over, and he and Nate teamed up on WWNS that very first year, and then Nate took it over full bore starting in 1971. You're going to be hard-pressed to find somebody that had more of an impact, not just on sports radio in this state, but radio overall. And then if you watched any high school game on Georgia Public Broadcasting in the last two decades, he was probably there, whether it was working with Matt Stewart or John Nelson. That guy was Georgia high school football.
I remember when I was in high school that we would be watching, especially some of the like state playoff games, and GPB would be broadcasting them. And to show you how much respect he had in the state of Georgia in the broadcasting industry, the play-by-play crew was Tommy Palmer and Bob Rathman. Bob Rathman, being the TV voice of the Atlanta Hawks, has done some stuff with the Braves and a big name as far as broadcasting in the state is concerned. Tommy Palmer was the play-by-play guy, and Bob Rathman was his color guy. That shows you how much impact he had on this broadcasting industry.
Well, I think people that he worked with felt bad that they had to introduce him.
Right.
Everybody knew who Tommy Palmer was, but part of the history in South Georgia, part of the unmistakable history for the Georgia Southern Sports Network, and there's a lot of people that are missing him.
Without a doubt. And right before the kickoff of high school football in the state of Georgia over the last week or so, a little bit more of a enlightening note. Colin Bowles and Ben Carr for Georgia Southern Men's Golf being honored this past week. They earned the 2019-2020 Men's Golf Dr. Richard Rogers Award. Now, this is in honor of course, Dr. Richard Rogers, who's one of the biggest supporters for Georgia Southern Men's Golf. It's given each semester to the Eagle who best exemplifies the term student-athlete, the overall arching term, student and athlete. And so Colin Bowles with a 4.0 GPA this past semester, while just over a 71 scoring average.
What, he slack off?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Come on, Bowles.
Ben Carr with a 3.6 GPA, just over a 70 scoring average. So big congratulations going out to those two as head coach Carter Collins announcing those this past week. Couple of news coming out as far as football is concerned on schedule changes. Last Tuesday, it was announced that this Saturday it'll be a 3:30 kick against the Campbell Fighting Camels. We'll dive into that matchup a lot later in this edition of Inside Eagle Nation, that one being on ESPNU this Saturday. Next Saturday, Georgia Southern hosts FAU on the 19th. That will be a 4 o'clock kickoff on ESPN2. A little bit later on in the season, as we get into October, the Wednesday night game against Appalachian State will be a 7:30 kickoff on the mothership of ESPN, and South Alabama was supposed to be on Halloween Saturday. Now that one will be moved up to a 7:30 kickoff on Thursday of that week, the 29th, and that one also being aired on ESPN. Army game time was also announced for a 1:30 kickoff, and that will be on the CBS Sports Network up in West Point.
Okay, two things before we get deeper into football. Number one, every Sun Belt game this week is on national television.
Beautiful. Beautiful. This is about the time that they should bring back the hashtag Fun Belt.
I'm talking actual TV, not streaming platforms or internet or anything like that. Legitimate on a broadcast network.
Right, you don't have to plug in the HDMI
exactly.
to get it on your TV.
I had to do that last weekend to watch Army in Middle Tennessee. And by the way, I don't envy ULM this weekend having to go up to West Point.
No, Army came out a swinging.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that continues this weekend,
I'm also going to guess that ride back to Murfreesboro was not too fun for the Blue Raiders.
We'll certainly get to Georgia Southern's trip up there in the next few months. But let's just say Army got off to a very good start.
You're going to hear a little bit more about the Black Knights of Army coming up later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We touch on it a little bit with Phil Steele as we get his preview of the 2020 season, not only for Georgia Southern, not only for the Sun Belt, but for the college football world as a whole. One final note to get to in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, Jared Benko, the director of athletics for Georgia Southern, announcing earlier on last week the implementation of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force, or the DEI Task Force for Georgia Southern Athletics. And just to kind of give you an idea of what it is, quote, a coalition of student athletes, athletic staff, and coaches who have all committed themselves to develop the best practices, strategy, and educational components regarding diversity and inclusion. The reason I read it as the direct quote is because there was not a better way to put it. And if I didn't, that was called plagiarism. But it's broken down to four different committees. The Community Outreach Committee of Glenn Hart, Coach Anita Howard for Georgia Southern Women's Basketball, Nicole Mitchell, the Associate Director of Student Athlete Services, Katie Knight of Georgia Southern Swimming and Diving, Baylor Bumford of Volleyball as well. You've got the Awareness Committee of Kim Dean, Head Softball Coach here at Georgia Southern, Dr. Chris Geierman, the Faculty Athletics Representative, B.J. Green, the pitching coach for Georgia Southern Baseball, Isabel Bray, the SAC president, also a part of the swimming and diving team. Taylor Sherwin, the assistant volleyball coach, and Shayla Smith of Georgia Southern Softball on the Awareness Committee. For Education and Accountability Committee, it's Sandra Warman, head rifle coach, Don Day, the director of strength and conditioning for Olympic sports, Aaliyah Booth of softball, Jeremy Smith of football, Maya Wilson of volleyball. And then finally, the Hiring and Retention Committee, Nick Sparacio, the athletic trainer for Georgia Southern men's basketball, Kevin Whitley, assistant football coach, Jacqueline Schroeder, the athletic business assistant, and Micaiah Freeman of Georgia Southern softball. So those four committees will all be kind of headed up by the DEI Task Force, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force.
Within recent weeks, the Sun Belt has come out with its own initiative called Be the Change, which, from an umbrella standpoint, what the league needs to do to promote social justice, but then what do the 12 schools in your league do individually to promote it their very own way? And we don't want to leave Little Rock and Arlington out because we're not quite in basketball season yet, but every school is now working towards that hashtag, that Be the Change. I love this move, and I'm very excited to see how they're able to not only implement, but also be that change.
We'll talk about that a little bit more with Jared Benko coming up in the next couple of weeks, and I would assume tonight you've got Tuesday Talks on Facebook Live with Jared. You're going to be hosting it. Jared going to be on the hot seat this week. People can
How I feel like it should be. He's been the one asking the questions of all the coaches all summer. Now he gets to go back and just sit there and wait for everybody else to just rain questions in him.
I wonder if we're going to do a true-false segment, because he loves that part of it. I think we should. And do we... See, he's gone and asked different people kind of the behind the stories. So do we get with his wife, Sarah, or some people that may know him that...
All right, Jared, true or false, you make your own barbecue sauce. That's false. But I do grill a good set of wigs and a brisket.
Are you working on a Jared?
That's not really an impression.
Okay. Stay tuned. Trust me, with all the traveling that we do, there will be one eventually.
Yeah, that's one that's going to take a while. I've always said with impressions that are tough, it depends on not just how they sound, but it's the mannerisms. And Jared talks very fast once he gets rolling. So I've got to figure a way to get his tone with how quickly he talks. So that may take me a bit.
We'll take notes tomorrow on Tuesday Talks, but
I've already had 6 months, but I guess I need more time.
You can get your questions in. It'll be on Facebook Live tonight if you're listening to this on time on Tuesday. Tonight from 5 to 6 on Facebook Live for Georgia Southern Athletics. Speaking of Facebook Live, had a great first Facebook Live with Inside Georgia Southern Football with head coach Chad Lunsford.
Yep.
Moving it to the Bishop Building. And... yes, it's weird not having...
It was different.
It's weird and different not having your live audience like we've grown accustomed to, because I've never done a football coaches show without a live audience.
Well, Chad needed people to play to, and I was curious to see how he was going to do that last night, but he always passes with flying colors.
Oh, without a doubt.
This is just how we have to do it right now. And there are some schools in the league that have been able to figure things out from a social distancing standpoint, but with what we've already dealt with, having to pause workouts because of a COVID cluster, and wanting to make sure that everybody is able to not only go to a game, but there is a game to go to, this is the safest way that we can do this. Now, we're hopeful that 2021 is going to be much different and much more normal, but this is just how we've got to do it for right now.
Yeah, it's not like this is our first choice of what we were trying to do. It was... as they say, play the hand you're dealt. We were played this hand, and we put down a Bishop Fieldhouse, a Facebook Live, and a network affiliate.
The point is we were able to talk about football, and we're going to talk a lot more football this episode, the next week, the next week, the next week, and that's good with us.
And hopefully the next week.
Yeah, but then we have more time, because doesn't that lead to app? I don't know how many times I said next.
I don't know.
We'll have extra time to talk about apps. We'll have 2 weeks to talk about app.
We'll go back, look at the tape, and figure it out.
Go to the booth.
Yeah. But for now, we will send it to Roger with this week's Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, let's go a different direction this week. You have any good mascot stories?
If you were to research our early costumes, we had some ugly ones. The first one looked like a little baby chick. And then finally we come out with our current one, which looked, not mean, but it looked a little intimidating. And realistically, it's all, you know, the costume's only one thing. The person you got inside of it makes the costume. One of my favorite costume guys we had was Cocky over at South Carolina. He was great for baseball games. We didn't really like him watching some of their football games, but Cocky, since I had the opportunity to umpire baseball at South Carolina, back in the 80s, the costume person in Cocky was very, very good. He knew when to be catch you. He knew when to, you know, cluck at you, and he knew when to shut the heck up when you looked him out of eye and got, you know, just looked him down. He knew when to be quiet. Our Eagle, you know, right now the guys who play it now are girls that, you know, you can't really know because they don't talk back to you. And I know that they're suffering in that thing because it's not air conditioned. But
Bob Hope didn't pay for it.
No, Bob Hope didn't pay for air conditioning in the in that suit. But I given him the opportunity to air condition it, similar to what we do with NASCAR. But nobody wants to pay that little bit of extra to make that guy comfortable.
Thank you very much, Roger. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
So we continue this week on Inside Eagle Nation. We step into Beyond the Bio, and just for this one, we do the Athletic Foundation. As Ben Rodriguez joins us, the Associate Director of Major Gifts. Ben, appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, of course. Good morning.
When you look at everything that's been going on the last couple of weeks and months, a crazy time for a transition, but what's the process been for you getting into this position in Statesboro coming from Starkville?
Yeah, so for me, I was at Mississippi State for about a year and a half, and I got a chance to work with Jared pretty closely. And so we developed a good relationship, a good friendship, and he's certainly been a mentor for me. And so relied on him quite a bit while we were working together. And when he got the job at Georgia Southern, you know, remained in contact, called him, talked to him about his press conference, right, and how that went. And for me, I'm an aspiring AD myself. And so just wanted to pick his brain about what that looked like and all that. And so just in the course of those conversations, you know, he knew what my career aspiration was and, you know, asked me if I'd be interested in looking at an opportunity in the foundation. And because I know him, I was like, heck yeah, right, let's do this. And so, yeah, I mean, it kind of happened really quickly too. And you know, I've been telling folks, I interviewed on a Wednesday, got an offer later that evening, accepted the offer Thursday, drove out to Statesboro for the first time that Friday to put an offer on a home. So it all within a week and a half, I would tell you that, you know, my entire career trajectory kind of changed and life really changed a little bit too. So
we go back through your story. You played football at Stony Brook and then graduated from College of Staten Island. How much does that help you being able to say that you were a student athlete? How much does that help you now in fundraising, saying you've kind of been in that shoes?
Yeah, I don't think it's a prerequisite to be a student athlete or to have been a student athlete and then work in college athletics, but I do think it certainly helps. And so, you know, my prior role in student athlete development, it helped tremendously, right? Being able to say, hey, look, I've walked in your shoes. And, you know, when you talk about how tired you are and you don't want to go to class and all this, I've been there, right? But it's important. And I think for me, what I've always drawn on is not the successes I've had, but I think the failures mean a lot more. And I think that our student athletes in particular, when they hear those things, it just resonates a little bit and it makes them more human, right? So, but it's been really helpful. I think in my experience, I've had a chance to, you know, look at the marketing side, the communication side, compliance, business office, the whole deal from both the perspective of a student athlete and as administrator. And I just feel like it helps a little bit.
Once you graduated, you and I were talking about it a little bit earlier, you spent 6 years in the accounting and finance industry before coming back to athletics. What kind of made you want to return to sports and athletics and make it a career?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was growing up, my father, he's been in finance his entire career. He was a CFO and still is of a nonprofit organization. And, you know, similarly to how you said your family kind of all went through Georgia Southern, well, I didn't know any better, and so I was going to go into the finance world, you know? And so after doing that for 6 years, it was very much just a job. It wasn't something that I was passionate about. And so having been a student athlete, I decided, hey, let me give it a shot. I went to grad school at UCF and was lucky enough to stick around Orlando in the athletics department out at University of Central Florida. And so, you know, it was, again, for me, it just, I wasn't passionate about it. And what I'm doing now and what I've done for the last 8.5 years, I mean, you get up every day and you got to go to work in college athletics. I don't think there's too many more jobs out there that, you know, are better than that.
You talk about going to UCF. You climb the ladder there in the 5 or 6 years that you're there. You go from an intern in the business office to the assistant director of student services, then the director of student athlete welfare and development, and on senior staff. What's the biggest thing that you take from kind of rising through the ranks and going through everything at UCF?
I think it's a combination of working hard, right? Showing that you're willing to grind while also being ambitious, right? I think it's a balance of the two. I think, you know, sometimes you have folks that maybe have one over the other and it doesn't quite work out for them. So that's one. The other thing I would tell you is the people that you're working for, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this many times, but, you know, finding those that could be mentors in your life, mentors in your career, is huge. And so I've been fortunate enough to have some great mentors. When I first got to UCF, you know, there was Jessica Rio, there was Keith Embray. But on the tail end of my tenure at UCF, it was Eric Wood, who's, you know, he's going to be a future AD himself. And I already mentioned Jared when I got to Mississippi State. So to me, it's, you know, you got to work hard, you got to be ambitious, and you got to find folks that are going to be mentors for you and really be ambassadors, you know, for you and talking about you when you're not necessarily around.
You talked about while you're at UCF going and getting your MBA and master's in sport business management. While you're doing that, you also co-author a couple of racial and gender report cards, yeah. One for Major League Baseball in 2012, one for college sports in 2011. Yep. What got you into doing those, and what did that experience kind of bring to you?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really timely, you know, to have that conversation right now with everything that's going on. So that's always been a passion of mine as well, you know, social justice and making sure that, you know, there's equity and equality for all. So, you know, one of the reasons I even chose the UCF DeVos program was because of their work in the community and their work with the racial and gender report cards. And so, again, that just kind of fit right in my wheelhouse. I thought that was, for me, that was eye-opening in a lot of ways, right? That just getting to see the way that different people think about the same issue and how, you know, differently thoughts and opinions could be. But again, I'm just passionate about that space. And even during my time at UCF and Mississippi State, you know, I was the head of the diversity and inclusion councils over there. And again, just something I'm very passionate about and continue to be, you know, and you know, I think for those report cards, I think highlighted for me a lot of the things that I kind of thought I knew, but it also opened my eyes to a lot of things that I had no idea about as well.
After you leave UCF, you head to Starkville for a little over a year and a half as the assistant AD for student athlete development. You introduced Life After Sports initiatives. You served on the founding chair as the student athlete welfare committee. We've talked about your passions a lot throughout this. Where did your passion for kind of helping the overall growth for the student athlete come from?
Yeah, I think the first person for me that jumps to mind is my father. You know, he was big on education. He was big on sports. You know, we bonded in both of those respects. But he also taught me a lot about, you know, social justice, right? So I think it stems from that. You know, and again, I think as I've gotten older and you kind of see how different experiences that different folks have and you know, it's developed a sense of empathy that, you know, I don't know that I had it when I was really younger, but as I got older, it kind of grew on me. So anyways, I just think, again, it's something that my father instilled in me and I hope to instill some of those, you know, similar kind of actions in my two young children as well.
You come to Statesboro primarily as a fundraiser, and you've done fundraising kind of at your previous stops, mm-hmm. but this is kind of the first time that it's 100% your job description.
Correct, yeah.
It kind of marries the two that you've been passionate about with the student athlete development and also fundraising and the money side of things. How much does that kind of excite you, getting able to be able to be a part of the financial side of it, but also using that to enhance the student athlete experience?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think my experience in the financial sector and the student athlete development space combined has really set me up for what I'm going to do now. You know, we're all in the business to make sure that our student athletes have the very best experience that they can have. And so having been student athlete facing for so long and now in a position to go out and tell the story of the student athletes, right? To me, that's what I'm most excited about now. I've done that a little bit, you know, in previous roles, but now it gets to be something that, you know, I dedicate all my time to. And there's a lot of people out there that care, that genuinely care about student athletes and the experience and the way that they're developing from the time that they're a freshman through college and then ultimately beyond, you know, their sports. So I'm passionate about that. There's a lot of people that are also equally passionate about that. And you know, from a philanthropic side that want to give back and support. And so, again, our job is to go out and tell that story and give our student athletes here at Georgia Southern the very best experience that they can have.
Give us a little bit of a insight of what your day-to-day kind of looks like as the associate director for Major Gifts.
Yeah. So relationships is number one, right? And so for me, it's going out and meeting with all the staff. You know, we just had a meeting with all of our coaches. I think there's just a few that I have to get to now, but really picking their brain about, you know, what their experience at Georgia Southern has been and what are ways that we as a foundation could help support their efforts and being successful. So that's right now, that's really what it is. It's going out, relationships, having conversations, getting to understand and learn the culture that exists at Georgia Southern. And then for us, I think the next thing is, how can we, you know, take this thing from where we are currently and then get to the next level? We've had so much success at Georgia Southern, and, you know, it's steeped in tradition, which is awesome. And now, again, how do we take that, hold on to that tradition while also, again, moving to the next level? And I'm just super excited to be here.
What's a couple of the things, and we've talked with Eric a couple of weeks ago, what are some of the things that you kind of use to take that to the next level?
So for me, it's a great question. I think, again, the first thing is understanding the traditions and the culture that exist, right? So if I look back at Irk Russell and just kind of how what he represents, you know, this mentality of working hard, being tough, doing more with less, you want to hold on to those things. But, you know, if we could do all this, and I'll just throw a random number, we can do this with $100. Imagine what we can do with $500, right? And so just thinking bigger. And I think it's a matter of just, you know, sharing your vision with people that you're speaking with, understanding what their wants, their needs, what their vision is, and then from there, putting it together and just figuring out what's going to be next. But there's a lot of passion here for Georgia Southern, and there's a lot of passion for doing what I'm saying, right? And Eric and Jared have done a great job in outlining that vision of, again, taking this thing to the next level. And I have no doubts in my, you know, my mind that we can make that happen.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. So give us something beyond your bio, something people may not know.
Yeah. So I thought about this a little bit, and I was thinking maybe I'll talk about family, and which is my number one value. Talk about travel, which I love to do. But beyond the bio for me, you mentioned played football at Stony Brook and then graduated from the College of Staten Island. Well, the story behind there is I failed out of school after my freshman year. And so, you know, for me, again, talking about the failures that I've had and how that makes me a little bit more relatable to student athletes, I use that all the time, you know, because it was self-inflicted. But, you know, I was able to overcome that, right, and go back to school, graduate, go get my master's, two master's degrees from UCF, and embark on a wonderful career, right? So I think that the one thing that people don't see in the bio is that. And I used to be shy about sharing that. But I use it as a source of pride now, right? It's you know, we all have failures and we're all going to mess up, you know, at times, but it's not about failing in that moment. It's about how you respond to that. And I've had, again, great people in my corner from my father. My wife, Emily, has been my number one supporter. Couldn't be anywhere, you know, where I am now without her and what she's done for me. And then again, the mentors and the friends and all that. So that would be the one thing beyond the bio that I'd like people to know about me.
Ben, appreciate the time. Appreciate everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Once again, that is Ben Rodriguez, the Associate Director of Major Gifts for the Georgia Southern Athletic Foundation. Another one of the bright spots that Jared Benko and his staff have brought into Eagle Nation. He is somebody that if you haven't met, that is somebody that just oozes with passion.
If you haven't met him, you will eventually, and he may be the one that ends up finding you.
Good chance of that.
especially this Saturday if you're at Alan E. Paulson Stadium.
Good chance of that. He's definitely somebody that you want to meet, whether you're thinking about donating to Eagle Nation or not. He's definitely somebody that is a really, really good person to talk to. But now we turn the tide to talking about the Camels of Campbell, or if you would like to be very specific, the Fighting Camels of Campbell. I don't know what the difference between a fighting camel and just a camel is. I mean, obviously a fighting camel fights, but do normal camels not?
Maybe they have a longer tongue. I don't know.
Does that deter them from fighting?
I really don't know. You don't think of a camel as being a militant creature.
No. Not
you don't think of him as being an aggressive creature. You think of him in the desert trying to find water.
Correct.
And storing water.
Correct. In their hump. Or you think of the commercial. The camel walking around the office. Yelling, hump day. Anyway. That is your this week's edition of Random Tangent. Would you look at the Camels coming into Alan E. Paulson this weekend, coming off a 6-5 record last year, 6-5 the year prior to that in 2018 as well. But we talk about this, it seems like every week that the offense starts and stops with a quarterback, but that's really the case with this Campbell team. You look at Hodge Malik Williams, the sophomore out of Atlanta area in the U.S. Military Academy prep. He's a guy that really makes this team go, both offense and on defense, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Couple of Georgia Southern layers. We found out yesterday from Coach Lunsford, he was actually in part recruited to come to Statesboro. Out of Hapeville Charter, played 2A ball. His final game, he lost to Fitzgerald in the playoffs. He ends up going to commit to Army, and up there you play on the Army prep team before you're added to the roster. The guy that recruited him to go to Army, Brent Davis, because he was the offensive coordinator up there, thought he would fit well into the system. Things did not work out up there, even though he led that Army prep team in 2018 to an undefeated season, but decides to go to Campbell. They were also one of the schools that were on him out of Hapeville Charter. He was terrific last year, more than 2,000 yards passing, the first Campbell freshman to ever go over 2K passing. He set a Big South freshman record with 17 passing scores, also elusive. He led the team in rushing, and just by watching him on film, I'm going to make a claim here. Don't get too crazy. Watching him run, throw, and the way he gets out of trouble, it reminded me of Tracy Ham. You may have a differing opinion if you watch him live, and I'm not saying Hodge Malik Williams is going to be in the College Football Hall of Fame in 15 years, but the way he stands in his uniform, the way he winds up to throw, and the way that he escapes trouble. You know, Tracy wasn't the fastest guy in the world, but he could just make guys miss. Some people have that ability. He can dead leg approaching tacklers. He's just so shifty and quick with the football. Got out of a lot of jams early last season. But what hurt them late in the year, they didn't have an effective ground game outside of him, and they also turned the ball over way too much. But if Hodge Malik Williams has time to throw, whether that's quick or whether that's deep, because there's not a whole lot of intermediate passing in this offense. He's either going to be looking quickly to go to Jalen Kelce, or he's going to be trying to go over the top to Jalen Kelce. And another layer to that is their top receiver from a year ago, Caleb Sneed, was not listed on their two deep. We find out he's injured. He's not available this weekend. That's a big loss for that offense, because I think he's one of the best receivers in the Big South.
Without a doubt. And you talk about Jalen Kelce. Between Kelce and Sneed, once you get past that, there's not a whole lot of experience on this Campbell, especially receiving corps. You look at a guy like Cedric Frazier, he's a redshirt senior, but in his entire career, he only has 4 receptions. And so not a whole lot of depth as far as the experience, especially with Hodge Malik Williams. And so being able to have those two guys, you only have Jalen Kelce now.
They do add Jai Williams, the former Coastal Carolina receiver. He did have 9 catches for Coastal last year, but transfers down the level, so he's automatically available. Tight end-wise, Julian Hill was a target that looked to operate in the seam, and somebody they really liked. They picked up Caleb Perez at Mount Dora, Florida, a 3-star prospect. They actually beat out Appalachian State for him. Really good size at 6'6", 240 pounds. How much they use him Saturday remains to be seen, but I think that's somebody that gets on the field sooner than later for them.
Flipping it over to the defensive side, you look at, we talked about the almost lack of experience on the offensive side. Defensive side, you've got a pretty good nucleus of guys that have been around this Campbell team for a couple of years. But really and truly, that defense is all centered around, and it's not just because he's the middle box on our board, but Justice Galloway Velasquez, he's a guy that really, well, you and I have been talking about the last couple of weeks. When you watch film on what Campbell did last year, this is a guy that's pretty much making every play.
It's just about every time there's a stop, he's involved in it, especially in games they played against option teams last year. They, of course, play Kennesaw State. They run the flex bone in the Big South. They also play Davidson, a former foe in the Pioneer League. They have shifted their offense to a gun option. They run a lot of pistol. But for Justice Galloway Velasquez, a fairly local product for them out of Cape Fear High School, he played quarterback in high school. He's put on a significant amount of weight since then. He did have off-season surgery, but he's been deemed good to go. He's listed as that number one middle linebacker in their 4-2-5 defense. He set the Campbell single season record with 111 tackles last year. Six times he had 10 or more. And in that Kennesaw State game, he had 18 stops. So for somebody that needs to know the ins and outs of an option scheme, number two is probably going to be around the football a lot on Saturday.
There are two guys that I want to touch on the front four for this Campbell's defense. First one being Josh Johnson, going to be a familiar name for Eagle Nation. Mm-hmm. Spent 17 and 18 in Statesboro, redshirted in 2017, played in 8 games in the 2018 campaign for the Eagles. He then transferred to Highland Community College for the 2019 season, now in the Campbell's defense and listed as one of the first-string DNs for the Campbell's. But on the other side, defensive end, Brevin Allen is a guy that you've got to watch. And looking at the stats, you see Galloway Velasquez, you see a couple of guys that kind of jump off the page, but Brevin Allen is a guy, 5.5 sacks a year ago, 11 tackles for loss, and this is a guy that can really wreak havoc on that front four.
Yeah, second team all Big South defensive end for what's largely a remade unit up front. Defensive coordinator Weston Glosser has had to get a little bit creative. They lost 3 starters from a year ago. Chris Cromartie is a D tackle that saw a good amount of action last year, so he should be back in as one of the nose tackles. But Brevin Allen can be a force both rushing the passer and trying to defend the run. 3.5 tackles for loss in that victory against Presbyterian a year ago. He did struggle down the stretch, didn't do a whole lot their final 4 games of the season, but make no mistake, if there's going to be a play made around the line of scrimmage, if it is not Galloway Velasquez, if it's not Darian Slade, the Rover, in their 4-2-5, Brevin Allen, 97, is going to be pretty closely involved.
You and I have looked at this Campbell team for the last couple of weeks, probably more than either one of us would like to admit.
Well, it's the first game, so that's just the nature of the beast.
Right, when you've got 6 months of nothing, just kind of next thing up. But what's the biggest thing that you see from this Campbell? And obviously, look, on paper, everybody knows it's an FCS team playing an FBS team. At the end of the day, that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. But on paper, should Georgia Southern beat Campbell? Absolutely. But I also think this is more of a challenge than a lot of people think in a pretty decent Campbell team.
This is a situation that sees Campbell playing only 4 games this fall. Because they're in the FCS, we know that every conference decided to postpone league play until the spring. But the Big South was one of the leagues that said you can play up to 4 non-conference games. They're playing all of them, all against FBS foes, 3 of them in the Sun Belt East.
I was about to say, heck, they may be in contention for the Sun Belt crown.
They're going to get Coastal for the second time in 3 seasons. They're playing at App State for the second time ever, and then they get to wrap up against Wake Forest, which I think is a really cool thing, because 3 years ago, this was non-scholarship football. They were still playing in the Pioneer League. So for these seniors to potentially not just end the fall, but if the spring doesn't work out, they could end their careers playing Campbell's first ever P5 opponent. I think that's a really cool reward for them. This is going to sound like a really, really poor pun that I'm going to make. Campbell's had 3 straight 6-5 seasons, so they're literally trying to get over the hump. And I couldn't think of a much better way to say that, but I figured, why not?
Just I like it.
Take the 2-inch putt, move on to the 18th tee box. They need a win to legitimize their move into scholarship football. Mike Minter is there in his 8th year as head coach. You remember him as an All-American and as a national championship safety for Tom Osborne in Nebraska, played 10 years for the Carolina Panthers. But these six-win seasons, they're good, but they're not necessarily where they want to be. And I'm not saying that they're going to go out and beat four FBS teams. I don't think that that's reasonable. But if they are looking forward to a positive spring in Big South play, I think that the only thing that they can do is find a way to pick off one of these FBS opponents. Can they do it? Absolutely. They've got the offensive firepower to do it. You take away Caleb Snead, I think it makes it more difficult. But if they can find a way to protect Haj Malik Williams a little bit more, their offensive line is massive, remade up front. They've got two P5 transfers up front. And defensively, if they can stop the run better, they gave up 235 a game last year. That Davidson game that I talked about, now that they're running the option, gave up 413 yards to a Pioneer League team. That doesn't sit well with them. Now, Campbell won the game, but that doesn't sit well with them. So if they're going to pick somebody off and make themselves believe that this is their best team ever, it's their first game, what do you have to lose if you're Campbell?
Yeah.
You have nothing to lose if you're the Campbells in this game.
No, and really and truly,
this entire fall, in fact, you have nothing to lose.
Exactly. This whole fall, you have four games.
And you're not supposed to win any
of
them.
Right. You're not supposed to win any of them. And so when you look at, I take a line from the water boy. He didn't hold anything back. That's the only thing that pops in my mind when you look at, and there's a couple of teams that are doing that where, obviously, at the end of the day, nobody really wants to admit it, but you're playing four games to get paychecks. That's what Campbell is doing.
Correct.
That's what a lot of teams are doing, and good for them. Being able to have this opportunity to do so to better their program, and also, it also kind of turns into a spring practice of sorts where you get a couple of games, you get practices, and then you actually play your conference slate, and then if you're able to go to the NCAA playoffs, go for it.
What I anticipate from Georgia Southern on Saturday, I think that whoever is available to play, because there could be guys that are ruled out maybe as late as Saturday morning with how COVID is going to impact the season with those test results that are taken Wednesday, but typically they get back Friday morning, Friday afternoon. So it may be pretty close to kickoff before somebody is ruled out. But the guys that are available, I think there's going to be a lot of guys that play, a lot of guys that Eagle Nation maybe knows a little bit of, maybe doesn't know at all. The most important thing for Georgia Southern defensively, play as hard as you can. Offensively, you've got to protect the football. And that's something that Georgia Southern has done better than anybody else in the FBS the last 2 years. Don't worry about big plays. Don't worry about chunk plays. Don't necessarily worry about domination. Let that take care of itself. If you protect the football, everything else drops into where it should.
You look at what Army did against Middle Tennessee. We alluded to it earlier. But you have a dominant victory for Army over Middle Tennessee while you're having a 9-minute drive, a 12-minute drive.
Yeah.
Just do what you do.
Yeah.
So,
and they protected the football.
Right. Bingo.
There it
exactly.
is. There it is. Let's do it.
Seen this before.
Let's do it.
Before we wrap it up, got a very special guest on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. The college football guru himself, Phil Steele, joins us. As we take a look at what 2020 has to offer for college football, and nobody better to sit down with than Phil Steele. And Phil, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, a real pleasure, Colin.
The college football preview has been a big part of what you've been doing for the college football world. Your 26th edition hit the presses this year, but a little bit different this year with everything going around the coronavirus. You guys were shut down for 2 months. The final pages you talked about in your magazine, the final pages hit the printers about a month and a half behind normal schedule. What has all of this been like for you guys trying to get everything ready for the 2020 college football season?
Yeah, it was a little different. And as you touched on, the main difference this year is every single year we send that last page of the press at the end of May because we want to be on the newsstands by July the 4th. But this year was different. The state of Ohio got shut down for 2 months. So I was in here in an empty office for 2 months just toiling by myself. And there's no way we could get the magazine out on time. But once the staff was able to return they came back with a vengeance, and I was able to talk to 110 of the 130 head coaches out there this year. So all the information is the same that's in the magazine as in past years. Just took us a little bit longer to get there. As you mentioned, we sent the final page of the press at the start of July as opposed to the end of May. And that was probably the big difference. The second big difference is the distribution. Normally we print a couple 100,000 copies, and they're everywhere, grocery stores, Walmarts, places like that. This year we only printed 50,000 magazines, about one-fourth what we normally do, and they're only available at two exclusive places. Barnes & Noble and Books A Million are the only two bookstores that have them, the only two stores, for that matter, that have them, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million this year, or, of course, philsteele.com.
You talk about talking to so many head coaches. You set the record this year for 110 coaches that you talked to, including Georgia Southern's head coach, Chad Lunsford. What do those conversations kind of go about, and how proud are you about being able to hit so many different head coaches throughout the FBS world?
This is definitely one of the prize things that I do each year, and based on the 26th year of the magazine, we've gotten to this point. But the conversations are not your typical interviews. I send the coach my two pages of players that I have. Every player on the team is on there. And then we go over each player line by line. I don't have a lot of other discussions, besides the players. We talk about the players. I do get an overall view of how they feel about the team, about the different positions. But the conversations generally take about an hour or so. And like I said, we touch on every single player on the entire team. So different than what a normal interview would be.
One of the articles that I love to read every year in the magazine is called Football 365, and it kind of talks about how football takes up pretty much every day of the year for you. Where did that passion for college football really come from?
I tell you, I've been a football fan since I was 4 years old, because it's growing up in Cleveland, Ohio. The Browns were big back then, and it was just a passion of my life. So I think once I started writing a football newsletter back in 1982, it became very time consuming just keeping up with the college and the NFL. And then once I started the magazine, there's no other time in the day for it. To put the amount of information that we do in the College Football Preview magazine is a year round venture, basically. I know it's a 6 full months to do the magazine, but then you have to have the other 6 months, which you're working on gathering information for the magazine. So I think it's just the fact that the magazine has so much information, so tough to get. But I tell you, my passion is indeed college football. I love the pageantry, the different teams, and it's just the main thing that I do.
One of the additions that you have, in addition to the College Football Preview magazine, you've got the Phil Steele Plus and Inside the Press Box that we've been able to enjoy the last couple of years. Where did that kind of come about, and kind of take fans through that?
Yeah, the Phil Steele Plus is basically the Phil Steele site, the internet, the stuff that I need. In other words, when I'm working on a game or a team or gathering information, I want to be able to go back and look at how the team has done the last 10 years, color-coded red and green, where the strengths have been, where the weaknesses have been. I want to go back and be able to, if I need to, like if somebody asked me, hey, when's the last time this team was a 30-point underdog, I can go back all the way to 1976, and I've got every game, every line on every game since then. You can click on the results, and it's something that we spend a lot of time on each year. In other words, if you click on the opponent, all of a sudden the last 23 years matchups pop up in front of you, and you could see at a glance who's been winning the series, who's been losing the series. Has there been one team that runs the ball better, or vice versa? So all this information, halftime scores, is at my fingertips for every game. And I figured if we're going to compile the information for me, why not put it out as Phil Steele Plus and let everybody have access to it? And that's what Phil Steele Plus is about. Now, the Inside the Press Box newsletter is what you would think it is. It's a newsletter where I give you the information and then say, hey, here's my forecast for the game. Here's who I think is going to win and by how much. And so that's the Inside the Press Box. And like I said, the Phil Steele Plus is a site that's basically built for me.
Now, as you dive into what 2020 will look like for college football, obviously COVID affecting a lot of it, not just the scheduling and different things like that, but just six conferences left playing in the fall. What's kind of the biggest impact that you see COVID having on the college football world as a whole?
Well, naturally, I'm already up here in Cleveland, Ohio, Big Ten country, and it was quite a shock to see the Big Ten not playing football this year. But I'll say this. As a college football fan, I feel if the six conferences that say they're going to play football all play football and we get a full season, it's going to be a true national championship in my mind. Give you a couple of examples. Only one of the teams that are in that I had in the Final Four are not going to be playing this year. That's Ohio State. And of the my top 10 Heisman candidates, 8 of the 10 are still playing. So I think if you get the and another advantage of this year as opposed to last year's is everybody going to conference only schedules. I mean, if you would have said before the SEC season this year and in a normal year or any normal year, hey, would you rather see 10 SEC games or 8? Everybody would have raised their hand and said, I want to see 10 SEC games. And same thing with the ACC, the Big 12. Everyone would have voted for more conference games, and I think that's going to make it very interesting. So I do believe, once again, if the season's played and played to its all the way through to the championship, then all of a sudden I believe it's a true national champ, and I think it'll be a very enjoyable season.
When you look at kind of from the 100,000-foot view at the Sun Belt Conference, what's some of the biggest things that jump off the page to you?
I love the way the conference is improving each year. And, you know, you take a look at the strength at the bottom. I can see improvement for teams like Texas State, which has definitely gone through a little bit of a rebuilding process the last couple of years. I think Jake Spavadal's got that team pointed in the right direction. A team like South Alabama. You know, South Alabama only won 2 games last year, but Coach Campbell doing a really good job building that team. And this year, they're poised to make a big jump up. A team like Troy that had an unusual step back last year to 5-7 has got 13 returning starters, including a very solid secondary this year. So I'd like the strength at the bottom of the Sun Belt. And then, of course, at the top, you've got your teams like App State, Georgia Southern, and Louisiana, who all have proven that they can play pretty much with anybody.
When you look at the Georgia Southern part of the College Football Preview magazine, the thing that jumps out to me that you point out is Georgia Southern moves from number 37 to number 17 on your experience chart. So it's a lot of familiar faces for Eagle Nation. What does that mean for you when you look at that, making the jump from 37 to 17?
Well, two things in this case. First of all, I always love teams that are in the top 20 of the experience chart. And if you go back and look at the past experience charts, you'll see that those teams generally have an improved year. Being number 37 last year wasn't too bad, which means this team is really experienced. They were experienced last year, and the majority of an experienced team comes back. That makes them overall even that much more experienced. So I think when I look at the experience chart, I've seen it happen for years. When a team falls, like LSU this year, for example, LSU falls all the way down to number 129 on the experience chart after being a top 20 team experience-wise last year, I think you're going to definitely see a weaker record. So in Georgia Southern's case, it should point definitely to a stronger record. And then, you know, there's a lot of other factors to look at. You go back to the early season games they had last year against Minnesota and Louisiana, a couple of really tough losses in games they could easily have won. Even the Arkansas State game and the Liberty game are more close, tough losses that they had last year.
Overall, on the offensive side of the ball, again, you spoke with Coach Lunsford a couple of months ago about this team. What on the offensive side really impresses you for Georgia Southern?
Well, you got to love the running backs. I mean, it is the strength of the offense. J.D. King, Logan Wright, Wesley Kennedy, these are guys that give you a great package. You can take it to the house anytime. They've got a veteran quarterback and Wirtz. Wirtz is a guy who just makes everything go, and he's going to be an improved passer this year. You know, he did make some big throws last year, and I think we're going to see him have his best year passing since he has taken over. Then you go up front on the offensive line. Remember last year, Georgia Southern lost 3 starting offensive linemen early in the season, so they were not really 100%. Now they have a plethora of experienced players. In fact, a guy like Drew Wilson, who had 13 starts at right tackle last year, might not even be in the starting lineup at the beginning of the year. That really speaks of the depth. So I think when you're looking at Georgia Southern, as disappointing as the Liberty game was in the bowl game, and that's the last thing you sort of remember, I think this is a Georgia Southern team that can be explosive this year, and it might just be the best offense that Coach Lunsford's put on the field in his 4 years.
Defensively, obviously in the backfield, you lose Montquavion Brinson and Kendall Vildor, the two corners for Georgia Southern a year ago, but you still have them rated number three in the Sun Belt Conference as a defensive unit. What goes into that, and what kind of impresses you about the defensive side of the ball?
Well, look at that front seven. I mean, we're talking about caliber guys with Raymond Johnson at defensive end. I think Raymond Johnson's going to get picked in the NFL draft this upcoming year. Then you look at the linebacking core, Randy Wade, Rashard Byrd, Renard Ellis. These guys are all veterans who are all possible NFL type of players. So that front seven really gets you excited. Now, you touched on the losses in the secondary, and that is a concern. Losing Vildor and Brinson is a pretty big loss at the cornerback position. They've got a veteran free safety back in Kent Duncan, but that would be my biggest concern on the defense would be the cornerbacks, but I love that defensive front seven. I think it's a pretty nasty unit. And in fact, both units, the defensive line and linebackers, rank in my top units in the front of the magazine, which is top units in the country.
Everybody talks about when you're doing a preview of a team, they talk about offense and defense. How much stock do you put into somebody in Georgia Southern, like losing somebody like Tyler Bass in the special teams unit? How much stock and how much weight do you carry into that when you look at this team as a whole?
Yeah, every position, special teams, running backs, quarterbacks, offensive line, defensive line, I give them all the same grade. And losing Tyler Bass is pretty big. I like the fact, though, that Anthony Beck is back at punter. He's a guy that had a 40.5 net. And I know a lot of folks look at average, and the average is only 42.5. But I'm a net guy. To me, it's how many yards you get per punt. And 40.5 is a really good net. Having a guy like Walter Kennedy, who missed some time last year, back as a top kick returner and punt return, I think also helps out. So this Georgia Southern team that has been solid. You look at all 3 years under Coach Lunsford, they've been in the top 51 of my special teams rankings, and I think they've got the possibility to get there back once again. But the biggest question mark is at that kicker position, because Tyler Bass was a heck of a kicker. And, you know, last year hitting 20 of 28 field goals with a long of 49, he had another good year.
We talked about kind of the scheduling nightmare that it's been across the country, but because of some of the cancellations and the SEC going conference only, Georgia Southern loses the opener at Boise State and then loses the game later on in the season at Ole Miss. Able to fill the Ole Miss spot with a game against Army up at West Point. What does adding something like an Army game do to this Georgia Southern schedule in your eyes?
I think that makes it really intriguing, because if you have two option offenses going against each other, you're generally going to have a lower scoring game. Both defenses are used to facing the option in practice. Unlike a regular team, when they face the option, they have to completely change their whole practice scheme up, and generally it's tough. I think what we're going to have is a tough, hard-fought, low-scoring game. And it's a game where, you know, let's face it, I had Georgia Southern an underdog at Ole Miss. And while Army's going to be a good team this year, I'm really looking forward to that one. It might be one of those low-scoring slobber knocker type of games.
Give us a little bit of a preview of what you've seen from Army since Georgia Southern has just started looking at them the last couple of weeks.
Well, Army is a team that had been doing fantastic under their head coach, Jeff Monken. And you look at the previous 2 years, they had 10 wins, 11 wins. They were just dynamic. Now, last year what happened when I was talking to Coach Monken, he felt that the players and even himself put a little too much into that Michigan game in week two last year. Remember, they took number 7 Michigan to 2 overtimes, had a couple of blown opportunities, could easily have won that game. After they lost that game, they were sort of a different team the rest of the year and actually slumped to a 5-8 season. This should be a bounce back year. They've got 12 returning starters coming back after having 7 last year. Jabari Laws figures to be the quarterback. If he's healthy, he's coming off an ACL, and he should be healthy by the end of the year. I expect Jabari Laws to be the QB. And defensively, this is a team that they lost their defense coordinator last year, and the defense was really the big difference. I mean, they allowed about 50 yards per game more last year. They have switch coordinators this year. They bring in Nate Woody as the new defensive coordinator. He was a defensive analyst at Michigan last year. And I think that the defense should be back to its normal standards. They're a team that likes to take time off the clock, you know, to run as few plays as they can to keep the defense fresh. And it's worked in past years. It's just they're off a down year. But I think Army's going to bounce back and probably be closer to the 10 and 11 win seasons that they had the previous 2 years than that 5-win season of last year.
Now, we've talked about it a couple of times with different schedulings being affected with the COVID-19 breakout. What does that do to your typical football Saturday? Obviously, you're going to have less games that you're having to watch, but what does that do to your college football Saturdays?
You know, I'm sort of actually looking forward to it a little bit because it'll be, for me, a little more relaxing, you know, as opposed to watching 12 games with maybe another two on the computer and trying to take into action all 14 games. I might be down to 8 or 9 games going on at a time. And that I think gets me to a little more involved in each of the 8 or 9 games. So I'm pretty much looking forward to it. I think it'd be a fun. And like I said, I believe if we get to the end of the season and, you know, everything works well, we will have a true national champ at the end of the year because the teams left are still among the best. And I also think that you're not going to see spring football with the Big Ten and the Pac-12. If you have a national champ crowned in January, you're not going to see spring football for them. But one thing I am looking forward to may be the FCS football playing in the spring. I think if they're playing in the spring by themselves, a lot of eyes are going to be on FCS football. There's a lot of good football played in the FCS.
Finally, before we let you go, give us some of your kind of overarching themes that you're looking for in the college football world, both overall and in the Sun Belt Conference.
Well, overall, I would have to say that I had to find somebody to replace Ohio State, and I actually went out of the box on this one. I have not been a UCF advocate for them to make the playoff in any of the recent years, but this year there may be that cry for it because UCF is a team that had 2 unbeaten seasons, and last year while they lost 3 games, the 3 losses were by a grand total of 7 points. This year they returned 16 starters. They actually have my number 7 rated defensive backs in the country, my number 9 rated offensive line, my number 7 rated running backs. And if you see UCF run the table like the possibility exists this year, and the Power 5 conferences have 2 or more losses, which is a distinct possibility because the second place team has to play the conference champ. And if you lose the conference title game, odds are you're going to have at least 2 losses on the season. So if that happens, I could see a team like UCF from the American Conference, the Group of 5, actually making the playoff. And I think that'd be good overall for all Group of 5 teams this year if that happened. Now, as far as the Sun Belt goes, naturally your favorites this year are App State and Louisiana. But the thing I like about Georgia Southern's chances is they beat App State each of the last 2 years. So they're a team that's not going to be afraid of playing App State. And when they get that game, I believe it's at home this year. They only lose 17 Lettermen off last year's squad. I think that the East Conference comes down to App State, Georgia Southern. And if Georgia Southern wins this year, then I think they can finally get to that Sun Belt title game. Louisiana and Arkansas State, I think, are the top 2 teams in the other division. This is going to be a bounce-back year for Arkansas State. They've got 2 capable quarterbacks in Logan Bonner and Lane Hatcher, veteran offensive line, solid defense. And, you know, you talk about coaches doing a great job building the program. Billy Napier's doing that at Louisiana as well, and he's got 14 returning starters this year. They're number 15 on the experience chart. But overall, I think it's going to be a pretty exciting year, and I like Coach Lunsford's chances. I think he's got himself a pretty good team coming back. He's been doing a great job since he's been at Georgia Southern.
No doubt about it. Well, Phil, we definitely appreciate your time, taking some time with us. I know you're a busy man as we get closer and closer to the start of 2020 season, but appreciate the time and really appreciate everything you do for college football.
All right. Sounds great. I appreciate you having me on. Great talking football with you, Colin.
Once again, that is Phil Steele, I keep calling him the college football guru. I don't know that he has an official title, probably college football analyst, but at the end of the day, if you need to know something about college football, it's either in the magazine, in the Phil Steele Plus, or you can just call him.
all the media that he does, interviews, podcasts, from the time that the magazine goes out, the fact that we could be one of those and the fact that his people are able to make time for us, that we really, really appreciate that.
Always great talking football with him, and you can just feel the passion that he has for this game in college football. He said, with everything going on, that you have some of the conferences that are not playing. He said now, instead of having 14 games on at a time on a college football Saturday, he may be down to 8 or 9 where he can actually pay attention more to those 8 or 9, which, good for him.
The good thing is, for those of you that subscribe to his services, he was high on Georgia Southern before all this happened. Mm-hmm. Now that there's only 76 teams playing, maybe he thinks this could be not just a year for the Eagles, but maybe the year season for the Eagles. But it all starts in 4 days.
It'll be a 3:30 kickoff from Allen E. Paulson Stadium. Frank Sulkowski, Russ Brown, Terry Harvin, and myself will be back in the tailgate lot. Same spot at 1:30. We will get things rolling on the Georgia Southern Sports Network with our pregame coverage. But 3:30 kickoff at Allen E. Paulson. It's Georgia Southern and the Campbell Fighting Campbells. And hope to see you there all across the Georgia Southern Sports Network. Until then, for the voice of the Eagles, Dandy Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.